I'm sitting here with Elijah Cummings in the Renaissance Hotel in Denver, Colorado. He just gave an amazing speech that came from the soul. I was thinking about that. I mean, teleprompters are one thing, but your forte, Elijah, is just speaking from the heart.
Yeah, it's hard to use a teleprompter. It's hard to go from a completely scripted speech. What I like to do is actually just have a few notes and then just come from the heart.
So talk about this moment. I'm curious, where were you on that day in 63?
In 63, I was about 12 years old. And so I was in middle school. And so, but I'll never forget my mother and father being excited about it. I can't remember exactly where I was, but I know one of their biggest worries was that there was going to be a lot of harm coming to people that would be there. And so she, you know, they had a lot of concerns, but this is a great day.
What we've seen is a lot of people who have been through the civil rights movement, white or black, and especially a lot of black folks, period, no matter what age they are, but especially men and women who are in their 50s and 60s, this is an extremely emotional moment for people, beyond the political moment.
This is extremely emotional. And the reason why is that our experience of race in this country has been very painful. First of all, you got to understand that when I was growing up, and somebody said the word Negro, and that's what, you know, we were called then, and it's changed to African American, black, whatever. But the connotation that went with that was that you were inferior. So and I think society, it wasn't your parents, but it was the society that tried to place this mental ceiling on you where you had to, first of all, get over the feeling of inferiority. A lot of blacks won't talk about that, but people my age, they'll tell you, I mean, if they're honest, that they had to get past that. And so when you got to get past that, plus deal with the challenges of the world that is getting an education and everything, it's sort of like a burden that goes with you. So then you go out there and you face barriers that, and you get turned away from different schools when you apply to college, or my parents couldn't, they tried to get mortgages to go in certain areas and couldn't get them. And you start, and then as a child, one of my most basic and early memories was standing in a line in downtown Baltimore at a store called The Mart. And I, you know, I couldn't figure it out. I said, Mommy, why are we standing in this line? Sometimes it'd be 300-400 people when, you know, around August when you get ready to go back to school. And she said, because we have to go here because there's maybe one or two other stores that will even sell to us. Which, and I said to her, that is so stupid. All that money, Mommy, they're going to lose all that money. And so, and now to see a Barack Obama who comes from a slightly, I mean, who's 10 years younger than me, but still to get to this point, is just short of a miracle. I mean, and I think people underestimate how significant what he has done is. First of all, he has to walk a very thin line. He cannot make African Americans, for example, feel that he doesn't care about them, but he can't be the black president of just the black people, and he cannot allow whites to feel threatened, and he has to also get past a lot of people's prejudices and try to get them to see him as a human being. A lot of people ask me, well, why does he play down race? He really does not want for people to think about race when they think about him. You know, as far as, you know, the general electorate is concerned, sure, he wants all people to be proud of him and all that kind of stuff, but basically, he knows that when they begin to think about race, there are some people that no matter what he does, no matter what his achievements may be, they are not going to vote for a man of color. He knows that. So for him to get to this point is incredible.
I wonder, and on another political level, if I can ask you a question. I mean, you've been known as you have deeply held beliefs, and you've are one of the leaders of the progressive thinking in Congress in terms of where this country should go. But you're also a very keen and acute politician, and you learn how to kind of work both aisles and also work the halls of power and power for yourself. You've gotten yourself in a position because of the hard work you've done in the U.S. Congress. Some people think there's two parties going on here. An ABC reporter was arrested, and a Democracy Now! Reporter was roughed up, attempting to ask people questions going into all these lobbyist parties that are going on around here. That is one end of the party. And all the people dying for this change in America is even another end of the party. But what about that contradiction that we see here in Denver?
I think there are some contradictions here. I don't care how you look at it. There is a strong desire on Barack's part to get money out of, that is, big corporate money out of politics. And in a way, Mark, I think where there are avenues, because he does not accept these funds, I think what that does is it causes the lobbying type to try to figure out, well, how do we still spend our money to be supportive of the party? There's a struggle going on here. There's a Barack struggle. Keep in mind, when Barack Obama took over the DNC a few months ago, when it was known that he was going to be the nominee, sent in his people, they began to change the rules that they could change with regard to money. And so it's a little different now. But still, a lot of the stuff had already been in place, the sponsoring events and things of that nature. So, and so that's happening. But I can tell you, part of the problem is because he is who he is, these folks are trying to play both sides of the street. They know, and what they're doing is they'll send their individual contributions, which are limited to $2,300 per cycle. And they may not have ever sent a individual contribution to anybody before. And then they'll still try to give money to these functions because they're looking at this as more or less being the old guard and Barack Obama being the new guard. In other words, there are two parallels. There's a parallel here. One, you've got Barack Obama coming in and saying, taking money out of politics. On the other hand, you got the Senate, the House, the people that he's got to work with saying, you know, we've got to have money to run. So it is a contradiction in a way. But again, I think that he has started us on the road to reducing the influence of money.
And finally, I know you got to go, but I'm curious about you in the, if Barack Obama wins this election. Excuse me, you're going to have a much more significant role in Congress and in what goes on here. Your relationship you developed with Barack Obama and your leadership of the Black Congressional Caucus when you were the head of it. I've heard you on C-SPAN when you, I mean, I was listening to C-SPAN sometimes on the radio, and then you pop up and you're asking these intense, complex questions about the military and spending. So I'm curious about what's going to happen to Elijah Cummings if Obama does win and what your role is going to be.
One of the things that I've said, and I mean this, some people would say what I'm about to say and not mean it. I mean this. I don't have any plans to leave my job as a 7th Congressional District Congressman. That's first of all. And I do believe that my life has already been ordered. I don't know what's in store for me. I really don't. But what I try to do is just go out there and do the best I can at whatever I do, because my heart is in what I do. So I believe that this is where I'm supposed to be, and I want this is what I do want. I want to be able to pick up the phone and say, Mr. President, I need this for my district. We need this for Maryland. We gave you the highest percentage of victory, 24 points, of any closed primary in the country. We had the most organized organization in the country. We had the highest, when you look at the size of our state, the highest volunteer base, highest number of people in the country. So that should help us to get some things done in Maryland. I hope so.
In the country. And when, kind of a personal question, when you first became congressman, there were a lot of people who said, Elijah Cummings, you know, he's just a delegate. He's not that bright. He's not. How could he be a U.S. congressman? And who really is he? I just wonder how you feel about that in terms of what you've kind of proven to the world in terms of who you are and had to in some ways, and where you've come to since that time.
I don't know how much of my speech you heard, but I talked about, yeah, about how when I first went to Howard County, the Sun paper said, this guy, he can't represent this. They basically said, this black guy from the city, he can't represent these people in Howard County. He has nothing in common with them. And then I said to myself, I mean, what do they think I am, a potted plant? I mean, because they're represented by Roscoe Bartlett. I mean, and I can tell you, I do very well in Howard County, very well. So it makes me, but that's been part of my life, and that's why I talked in there when I talked in my speech about the discounting of people's lives. We have a tendency to, and that's what happened to Barack. Keep in mind now, they discounted him. They discounted him. They did not. People did not want to give him credit for being a law review at Harvard, a constitutional lawyer and scholar, a state senator for 8 years. Didn't want to give him in. They basically said he was an empty suit. But, Mark, what I try to emphasize to people is that people say that about others every day. And people, but there are a lot of people that are a little different than Barack. They become discouraged. And they start believing what people are saying about them. And one of my biggest challenges has been to make sure that when people try to discount my life, and they have tried very hard. Even as a lawyer, I never forget, man. I would remember when I was practicing law. I would walk in and the lawyers would look at me and say, well, this is going to be a cakewalk. And they don't know that I had spent all night preparing. And had taken up my whole weekend preparing. And because I knew the challenge. But you got to understand this piece. I'm going to go back to the question you asked a little bit earlier. And that is, why is this so emotional? Because for African Americans, they know what he has been through. He's friendly, he's nice, but we know he's had to go through a lot of struggles to get to where he's gotten to. This is no joke. He had to be able to repel peer pressure. He had to be able to push away the negative things that people have said about him. He had to get there and to hold his family together and to be a decent human being and to be brilliant and to have the desire to even want this job. And to do what's necessary to get this job. I mean, to me, it's incredible. Not a lot of people, even if they had all that that he's got going for him, the last thing they would want is to go to run for a job like this. The last thing. But he wants it, so I'm going to help him win.
We'll see what happens in November.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Mark. I am so glad, and I say this with every bit of sincerity I have in my heart. I am so glad that I have a chance to see this before I die. And I mean that. My father used to say, we have to pass things from generation to generation. And just the thought that I had something to do with the first African-American in this country becoming president of the United States, to me, is, as my mother would say, who is a Pentecostal minister, is my crowning glory, which means it is one of the greatest things that I could have ever done. So, and then to share the moment, to be alive just at this time, like I said in my speech, just to be alive is significant. So it's no joke. I mean, you know, as you can tell, it's very emotional for me. Because I also know a lot of the people who have fallen by the wayside. The same little Barack Obamas whose lives have been discounted, who people told them, like me, put me in special ed, told them that, you know, that they were never going to amount to much. But yet and still, many of them are dead. Why? Because their lives were discounted. And they believed it. And last but not least, the sad part about that, there's a song by Cat Stevens, and I quote it so often. He says, oh, very young, What will you bring us this time? You're only dancing on this earth for a short time. Oh, very young, what will you bring us this time? I believe that every single child comes on this earth bearing gifts. But those gifts have to be developed. And the gifts do two things. It helps the person become all that God meant for them to be, but it does something else that people forget. The gifts are like the gifts that Dr. Ben Carson has, able to be a great neurosurgeon. Or the gifts that you have, able to communicate with people and bring information to people and write and do all of those wonderful things. So what I'm saying is that they are all... So what happens is that when that child decides that he wants to believe the discounting, then in many instances he never gets not only to develop his gifts and therefore never to deliver them to our world. And that's sad.
Glad you're coming. Thanks so much for your time.